Now we're holding on Kuf Nun Amud Aleph, the ninth line. The Mishnah had told us that you have a difference with a Shchiv Merah, whether he gave away all of his nechassim or only part of them. If he gave away all of them, then we said Im Omad Chozer, if he recovers from his illness, then he gets them all back, then all of the gifts are revoked. Because we assume, as we learned a few days ago, we have an umdana, we have a very strong reason to assume that he wouldn't have given it all away and left himself penniless. On the other hand, if he gives away only some of them, then im amad eini chozer, then even if he recovers, those gifts are not revoked. And the Mishnah had said if he left himself karka kol shehu, and so we were discussing what exactly does he have to leave for himself that we would say that it's not a matana, that's not a matana b'kuloi, only a matana b'mitzvos. We had now, even though the Mishnah had said karka kol shehu, Rav Yehuda had told us in the name of Rav, it doesn't dafka have to be it's not actually kol shehu, it actually means only if he left himself enough karka to get parnasa from, for him to be able to live off the proceeds of it. Then we had Rabbi Yumi Abba Abba saying that that it's not karka necessarily. Metaltlin would have the same rule. Like Gemara had mentioned, k'day parnasasa. There's a machlokas we've shown him within that whether in fact the halacha would be in the end that it needs to be k'day parnasasa or not. In any case, the point is that both of them are saying that when the Mishnah says karka kol shehu, doesn't mean exactly that. It can mean it the so Rabbi Yosef said why? I mean, the Mishnah says karka, it means karka. The Mishnah says kol shehu, it should mean kol shehu. So why are they saying that it means inexact? So yesterday we dealt with that Rabbi Yosef had wondered how could you say that when that in the Mishnah says karka, but in fact the din includes metalkalin as well. And Rabbi Yosef had asked from a different case, and then we went back and forth between him and Abaya about that. So we're left with that. Yes, it is a valid question. Why, if the Mishnah is saying karka, why shouldn't we say that it means specifically karka? Okay, so now let's deal with the other part of now let's deal with the other part of Rabbi Yosef's objection. So v'chol heicha the tani kol shehu less le shiura. Are you telling me, Rabbi Yosef, that any time it says kol shehu means there's no shiur for it, means even the smallest amount, and therefore you're asking on Rabbi Yehuda, who's telling us that in this case it means there is a shiur to it. It has to be enough for him to be able to live off the produce of that land. V'hatnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Chulin. One of the later Purakim in Masechta Cholin deals with the mitzvah of Reishis HaGeiz. We know the Torah tells us that when you shear your sheep, one of the 24 Matnas Kohuna is you're supposed to give some of the shearing, some of the wool to the Kohen. The idea being, when you think about it, the 24 Matnas Kohuna are meant to cover all of the needs of a Kohen. You have things of food like truma and Trumas Meiser, and then things like that. You have skins from the Korbanos, you have wool from the sheep, and you have various other things so that they have everything they need. In this way, they can be learning and teaching Torah full time. Anyway, so you have this mitzvah of Reishis HaGeiz. Now, there's a minimum amount, though, that you have to have, both in terms of the number of sheep and the amount of wool that they produce, in order to be chayev in this mitzvah. So the Mishnah says, Reb Doiseb ben Harkinas Omer, Chomesh Rechelas Gozizos Mana Mana Upras. Only if you have at least five sheep, and each one of them produces at least a mana and a half's weight of wool. Where we get that figure mono pras, Tosfos wonders where the Mishnah gets it from. But apparently, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman writes in Kovetz Jurim, apparently it's one of these things that's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. Anyway, so Doseph and Hokina says it has to be that each individual sheep produces a mona and a half's weight of wool, and only then are you chayiv in Reishis HaGeiz, and only if you have at least five sheep that do that. The five sheep is actually machlokas b'shama b'shilo. The halacha is like b'shilo, but it's five. B'shama would say that two is enough, but as far as this amount of mono pras, so it needs to be that each one produces at least that amount. A mona, by the way, is 25 sloim. A sela is usually a sela is usually taken to be a little less than an ounce. So you're talking of so a mona would be approximately 20 ounces. So a mona and a half would be approximately 30 ounces. So you're saying that each of the Reb Doseph ben Hokinas is saying that each of the five sheep has to produce at least approximately 30 ounces worth of at least 30 ounces of wool. The chum say it doesn't mean The Chum say that each of the five sheep has to produce only kol shehein, only even a small amount. Now, how much is that small amount? Vamrinan, so we discuss in the Gemara there in Cholin, the Kama Kol Shehein. What is that Kol Shehein? Does it mean that each of them produces only one strand of wool and you have to give from it to the Kohen? No, Amar Rav, Mono Pras. No, Rav says that it means that that it means that each of them that means that between the five of them they produce the mona and a half. So Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas says that each individual sheep needs to produce a mona and a half of wool to be chayiv and reishis hageiz. Rav is saying, according to the Chachamim, that no, it's enough that between all the five of them it produces mono pras uvelvad shiyu mechumoshes, as long as that you have that each one is producing at least. It's at least its share, at least it's 20, at least 20% of that amount. So meaning, in other words, if you were to have five sheep, and so let's divide the mono pras in let's divide the mono pras into five. So if we're saying that a mono pras is approximately 30 ounces, then dividing that in five would be 6 ounces about. So if each of the five sheep produces at least 6 ounces, then between them you have enough for reishis hageiz. But if let's say one of them produces seven and another one five, and so and so forth, then you would be potter because there are some of them that are not producing their share towards that total. In any case, the point is that we're saying, even though the Chachamim say kol shehein, Rav is saying that it doesn't actually mean kol shehein. It means that they still have to produce a certain amount, more than just kol shehu. So you see that kol shehu doesn't necessarily mean. So you see that mona. So you see that that kol shehu doesn't necessarily mean even the smallest amount. There is a minimum size to it. So then, what's bothering Rabbi Yosef that in our case, Rabbi Yehuda would say that in our Mishnah, when it says karka kol shehu, it doesn't actually mean kol shehu. And the answer is hosam bedinhu d'loy lisni kol shehu, because really it's true. In the Mishnah there, there's no reason for it to say kol shehu, given that, as Rav is saying, there is a minimum amount. It should have been that the Mishnah would have said the actual amount that the Chachamim say. The ID to Kama Tanakama Shehuda. Yeah.
And who says that what applies to one case applies to another? I mean, that's also a flawed reasoning.
Well, no, I
It
mean,
doesn't
well,
mean because culture applies in one situation, it applies in another, without justification, at least.
right, but we shouldn't assume without justification. We shouldn't assume without justification that the word kol shehu is going to have different meanings in different places. If we find, I mean, obviously, in each one, it's going to be,
I'm not
it's going
saying
to be.
we shouldn't assume. I'm saying if you do assume, you need to bring justifications to the assumption. You cannot assume
No,
without
fakert.
justification.
No, I would say fakert. The word kol shehu has a meaning. Basically, kol shehu means any amount. So if you want to tell me that, if you want to tell me that that in a certain case, so you want to tell me that kol shehu in a certain case doesn't actually mean the smallest amount, then you have a basis for saying that it could conceivably mean that in other places as well. So here in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yosef is insisting kol shehu has to mean even the tiniest amount. And how can Rabbi Yehuda say differently, where we clearly see that Rav in Cholin is saying that kol shehu doesn't always have to mean the smallest amount. And by the way, Tosfos point, no, the word kol shehu has a meaning.
You cannot say that kol shehu has a universal meaning all the time. That's excessive.
I don't know
And
about
if you
that.
do say that, well, yeah, I mean.
No, in English, if you say in English, if you say if you say any amount, then you would take it to mean any amount, so meaning there's no minimum amount. If you're going to say that in a certain case, any amount means it has to actually be at least such and such, then you have a basis for saying that it can mean that in other places as well. The point is, though, what forces Rabbi Yosef to say. Here, Rabbi Yosef is asking, how can you tell me in our Mishnah, karka kol shehu doesn't mean kol shehu, it means a minimum amount? It means enough to live on, when kol shehu should mean next to nothing. Well, we answer back to Rabbi Yosef, why? In Cholin, we see that it means a minimum amount, it means one fifth of mono pras. So you have a basis for saying that in other places, kol shehu could also mean that it's not any amount, that there is a certain minimum size.
So that's exactly my point.
Yeah. So
So that's exactly my
no, so
point.
that's 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 you have to
But you
check,
have to
but the
pass the
point is,
point.
what forces it up? We have to go on anyway, but the point is, what forces Rabbi Yosef to say that in our Mishnah, Dafka has to mean any even the tiniest amount, when we see in another scenario, that when we see in connection with Reishis HaGeis, that it doesn't necessarily mean that, and it can mean a certain amount that's relevant to that thing over there, and therefore, in the same way, it could mean that over here as well.
Because there's a third scenario in Chametz, kol shehu means kol shehu. And how
Okay,
come
so
it's
then
not taken?
okay, so
It's
then the
not
point is.
raised here.
Okay, so then the point is that sometimes you can find that kol shehu means even the tiniest amount. Sometimes, as in this example of Reishis HaGeis, you can find where it means a certain minimum amount, and below that the din doesn't apply. And yet, Rabbi Yosef is insisting over here that it has to mean the first one. Why? When we have a basis for saying equally well that it could mean the second one. We're not necessarily saying it has to mean that over here, but why is Rabbi Yosef saying that it can only be the other way? In fact,
Right, and that's not correct also. Yeah,
okay,
that's right. It's not
okay,
correct.
so, okay, let's go on. In fact, Tosfos points out, I mean, you could very well say, look, Rabbi Yosef is entitled to argue with Rav, but still, the Gemara is wondering whether Rabbi Yosef is in fact going to or is in fact arguing with Rav on that. In any case, so the answer is, in that case, really, the Mishnah shouldn't have said kol shehu, because it's true. Generally, kol shehu does mean even the smallest amount. I did to Ka'amar Tanakama Shi'ur Rabba, but because Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas mentions a larger amount, according to him, each of the individual sheep has to produce mono pras to be chayiv in Reishis HaGeis. And the Chachamim are answering back with a smaller amount, that's saying that amount that you, Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas, are saying is split up among the five of them. So therefore, Kori la kol shehu, therefore the Mishnah can call it kol shehu, even though in fact usually kol shehu should mean the smallest amount. So therefore, so Rabbi Yosef's question is valid after all. Really, kol shehu should mean the tiniest amount, and there's no minimum value. In that particular
Is
case,
there a
like
difference? Is
one
there a
second, let me, one
difference
second, one
between
second, one second,
culture
one second,
who?
one second, one second, one second, one second, one second. Let me finish the sentence, please. Let me finish the sentence and then ask. But normally, basically, kol shehu means even the smallest amount. There's no minimum amount that would be called kol shehu. In our particular, in the case of Reishis HaGeis, because it's by contrast with a larger amount, so therefore we use kol shehu to refer to a smaller amount, but still above a certain threshold. In our Mishnah, you don't have that contrast. Therefore, Rabbi Yosef is justified, after all, in saying that kol shehu should mean any amount without any minimum, and therefore he's asking on Rabbi Yehuda, who says to the contrary.
Okay, so my question is there a difference between kol shehu and ma shehu? And if
We're
yes,
not talking about
why
mashu
don't
over here.
we?
This whole sugya over here, we're talking about kol shehu.
Yeah, but
Both,
that's the
yes.
question.
Okay, so mashu is a different matter. If the Mishnah had said mashu, we could talk about it, but the Mishnah says kol shehu. The Mishnah in Chulin also says kol shehu, and therefore we were asking that if over there you have a minimum, you have a floor to it, you have a minimum amount, then the same thing could apply in our Mishnah, and the answer is that no, there it's only by comparison with a larger amount, and here it's not.
What's the meaning of mashihu?
Well, the meaning of mashu also means a small amount, but that's not the term that we're using, so that's not really relevant over here. All right, let's go on. Okay, so the point is Rabbi Yosef's. So both parts of Rabbi Yosef's question have been upheld. It's a valid question to ask why the Mishnah uses the word karka if, according to Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'aba, it includes metaltelin as well. And it's a valid question to ask why the Mishnah says kol shehu if, according to Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, there is actually a minimum amount below which the din won't apply. Nonetheless, though, it doesn't necessarily mean that Rabbi Yosef is arguing la halacha with them. He may just be asking. Where are you getting this from? But nevertheless, the din is still a din. Okay. So the Gemara goes on. So now let's talk about various dinim in terms of when a person, again, when a shchivra is giving a gift of his possessions to other people, when we say that Omad Choizer, that if he recovers from his illness, then he gets it all back, and when do we say that not? So let So, by the way, another example, by the way, of kosher who, another example of kosher who, meaning a certain minimum amount, Tosfos brings from a Mishnah in Kalim, which is also the same kind of thing, where a Mishnah uses the word kosher who, and it actually means a minimum amount. Same idea. Then the Mishnah starts with a larger amount, four tefachim, and therefore kosher who can mean, in that case, a tefach. But basically, where you don't have that contrast, as in our Mishnah, then kosher who should mean kosher who, and that's what was bothering Rabbi Yosef. So the Gemara says as follows. Pshita, it's obvious as by way of introduction to the other to the following questions. Omar metaltali laplanya. If a person say if a shivmana says my metaltlin should go to ploini. So then let's figure out what exactly is included in metaltlin. Now Hagoyes Abach changes actually. It says that the word is not really metaltali, which means just metaltlin in general. It's really supposed to be metaltali, which means my metaltlin. Because in fact, there is the point. We often say miut rabim shnayim. We often say when we're darshaning psukim that when it says that when we have a plural, it means two. So why over here don't we just say that means two metaltlin? So in fact, one explanation that the Ritva answers is just that. If he says metaltalai my metaltlin, then we have to assume it means not just two. It means all the ones that apply to. It means all the ones that belong to him. So now we need to figure out what exactly is included in the definition of metaltlin. The Baal HaMor, by the way, gives a different answer. He says, when you have, for example, if a person were to say, my houses or my fields or whatever, then we could talk about that it means only two houses or two fields or what have you. But here what he says, metaltlin, which is a general term that includes many different kinds of assets, then we assume that it means all of them, that means more than just two of each of them, but we have to figure out what kinds of assets are included in the words metaltlin. Obviously it doesn't include land, but even among other objects. So it means kol money tashmish tekoni, means the other person is koine all of the utensils and dishes and clothing and whatnot that he and tools that he uses, levar michiti v'sairi, with the exception though of wheat and barley. Of course, wheat and barley is movable, but Rabbeinu Yohannesson points out they're not. People don't call them metaltlin. People call them by a different name. They call them tzvur. So therefore, they have a special name of their own, and therefore they're not included for this purpose in the term metaltlin. The Rashbam brings his opinion is as well nira be'enai, that it also the same thing. It also excludes as animals for the same reason, because they have a specialty of their own. So in short, in other words, the Shtimra said that all that my metaltlin should go to Pliny, so Pliny gets all of his movable items, but not his wheat or barley, and according to the Rashbam, also not his animals. What about if he says kol metaltlai laplanya? What if he says all of my metaltlin go to Pliny? Then by adding the word kol, it means afilu chiti v'sairi. Then it means that he is including even the wheat and barley, because he is coming to be marba something else. So then that would include the wheat and barley. And I guess according to the Rashbam, also the animals. He would even acquire the upper millstone. Millstones in those times were made, you had two millstones where they would rotate one on top of the other and they would grind the grain between them. Typically the lower millstone was fixed to the ground, was attached to the ground. You could move it. You could take it out of there if you're moving, for example, and bring it to someplace else, but ordinarily it would stay in one place all the time. The upper one you'd take off every so often in order to clean them. So the upper one is considered part of metaltlin as well. Levarme rechaim atachtoina, but the lower one would be excluded because the lower one is usually kept in place, and when it needs to be fixed or cleaned or whatever, then they do it while it's sitting there on the ground. What about if he says kol dim metaltel? If he says anything that can be moved, then afilu rechaim atachtoina koni. Then the recipient is koina even the lower millstone, because after all, it can be moved. It just usually isn't. It's not actually mechubal akarka. It's just usually because it's heavy, because it's large and heavy, it's usually left in place. But it could actually be moved, and therefore it would be included in kol dim metaltel. So now, Iboilahu, so now we have the question, Avda kimikarka or kimitaltla dummy. What about an Eved Knani? Now, there's no question, Rashbam and Tosfos say, when it comes to Dinim Daraisa, then we say that an Eved, as we talked about yesterday, an Eved is considered like Karka. That's relevant, for example, as far as how you acquire them with kesef shtar and chazaka, just like land. It's relevant as far as the dinim of shvua, that, for example, if somebody claims that you stole my eved or whatever, some case where ordinarily in a case of dinim mominis, a person would have to swear if the claim was on an eved, then he doesn't have to, and so forth. You have a number of dinim that depend on that point. However, here we're asking when it comes to here, when it comes to the shchivra giving away his metaltolin. When it comes to Loshen B'nai Adam, do we consider them to be part of Karka or not? And therefore, so if he's saying that I'm giving away my metalkalin, does it include Zavodim or not? Omelet of Acha Breder of Ibula of Ashi, Toshma. Come, we can prove from Mishnah earlier in our Masechta, when we were dealing with in the fourth parak the various dinim of when you sell such and such real estate, what exactly is included and what isn't included. So we had a Mishnah over there, Hamoicher Seir, a person sold a city, Mocher Batim, so automatically included in the sale are all the houses in the city. The Mishnah had meant the Gemara is leaving out over here a few things that are mentioned in the Mishnah over there. Boris, but anyway, Shichanu Ma'oris, he also sold all the water pits that are in the city. Bur is a round water hole. A Shiach is a square or rectangular one, and a Ma'ora is one that has a roof over it. Anyway, all of those are included in the city. Umerchatzois, all the bathhouses, or Beis Abadin, and the olive presses, or Beis Hasholchin, and the fields in the fields there that need to be irrigated. So all of those are actually we talked about over there. Beis Hasholchin, the usual meaning of Beis Hasholchin is fields that need to be irrigated. There, actually, we talked about when we learned this a few months ago that here actually Beis HaShochan doesn't necessarily mean specifically fields that need to be irrigated. It just means the fields that surround the city. So all of those are included in the sale of the city. But the sale of the city does not automatically include the metaltolin that are in the city. Of his man, but if the seller says, I'm including the city and everything that's in it, then even if there are animals or avodim in the city, then they're all sold. In other words, so let's figure out then. If you tell me avodim are considered like metaltolin, and therefore they wouldn't usually be included unless you say so, mishum hachilem bereisha. So therefore, that explains why in the reisha the eved is not going to be sold, because when he had said that he's selling, when he said that he's selling the city, usually it would mean only the real estate and the things that are attached to the ground in the city, and not the avodim. So only if he says all the metaltolin. Eli amet k'makarka domi. But if you tell me that avodim would be considered like karka, amayla mizdaban, then why wouldn't it be sold even in the reisha? So that shows that an eved is considered, at least in Loshen B'nai Adam, like metaltolin, and therefore that would be the answer. When this shchivra is saying I'm giving all my metaltolin to Pliny, then yes, it would include the avodim. So the Gemara asks back, "Ve'elamayik." So then, what are you going to tell me? So you're saying that you're considering based on that Mishnah, you want to consider avodim to be metaltolin. My afilu. Then why would the Mishnah have to say even? Obviously, when you sell the city and you say I'm including all the metaltolin, then obviously it would include all the furniture in the city and all the other kinds of metaltolin. So you wouldn't even so the Mishnah shouldn't even need to say afilu avodin, because there'd be no chiddush in it. So doesn't that itself show fakert that avodim are not really considered like metaltolin, and therefore the Mishnah has to say nevertheless in this case you should know they are included. Ella my islach lemeimar. So what are you going to answer? Shani metaltolin denied me metaltolin denied. After all, you need to draw a distinction between metaltolin that can move on their own and ones that don't. So therefore, the Mishnah is saying avodim and behema, even though they're able to move under their own power, nevertheless they're still included in the sale of the city. And you don't need to say anything about, for example, the furniture and other things like that, where they don't move on their own. Of course, those are included, but the chiddush is even the ones that do move around are included. So therefore, that would be why the Mishnah says afilu. Well, the same way then. So now afilu tamim become a karka dummy. Then you could say maybe avodim are included in karka, not only for dinim d'oraisa, but maybe even in loshen bnei adam. But you could say shanim a karka denayed, a karka lo nayed. Still, you could draw a distinction between karka that moves on its own and karka that does not. And you would say, so when he sells the city and does not specify who he v'chomasha, then you would say all of the real estate in it that's not movable is sold, and that would include all the various the houses and water pits and whatnot that the Mishnah had mentioned. But when it comes to avodim, even though they're considered like karka, nevertheless the fact is they move around, and behemoths, then they move around, and therefore they wouldn't be included in the in that definition of karka. So maybe, in other words, so maybe the word karka doesn't, so maybe the word metaltlin does include avodim, or maybe not. Maybe they're considered part of karka, but there's a difference between two different types of karka, essentially. So no proof from there, one way or the other, really, about this case of the Shchiv Mara over here.
Avodim don't move around wherever they want to go. They have to stay with their masters.
Well, they have to stay where their master tells them, but the point is, in other words, that they don't get dragged, they don't get dragged around, right? They have a brain, they have feet, they're able to walk around on their own. It's not, in other words, yes, the master tells them where to go, but they have within that they have the freedom of movement. You decide you want a piece of furniture someplace, it's not going to pick up and walk, it's not going to pick itself up and walk over there. But you tell your Evan, I want you to be in such and such a place, he's going to pick himself up and walk over there. That's the difference. Animals also. Okay.
So what's the rule then?
Well,
Avadim for
that's what we're trying to figure out. That's what we're trying to figure out.
yeah. But
We know
what
that
have
for
we to...
din, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
We know that for dinim d'oraisa and eved is considered like karka. For example, again, as far as shvuah and kinyan and various other things, the question is now, and this is that we, it's clear, fine, from the case of the Mishnah over there about selling a city. You could say either way. You could say the Eved, the wording of the Mishnah, Afilu Avodim, suggests that Avodim are kind of in a class of their own, somewhere between Karka and Metaltlin. Well, the question is, how does that apply to a Shchiv Mara giving away his Metaltlin? So, Omale Ravina, Loravashi Toshma. So Ravina says to Ravashi, come, let's bring a proof from the from a Braisa that we brought before in our that we brought before in our Sugya. We said actually it's a Mishnah, really. It's a Mishnah in Peah that we discussed yesterday. A kois of la'avdei kol nechosav, or really a specific kol nechosav la'avdei. A person writes out a document giving all of his nechosim to his eved, yotze ben chorin. Then that eved goes free, because when he gives all of his nechosim, the eved himself is part of the, whether you say an eved is karka or metaltlin, he's definitely part of nechosim. So therefore, when he says, I'm giving you all of the nechassim, meaning he's giving him his own freedom. So therefore, the eved goes free, and therefore he's acquiring the nechassim. So yotze ben chorin, so he goes free, and he gets all of the nechassim. Shir karka kol shehu, but if the master in this document left out and said, I'm reserving for myself a certain part of karka, kol shehu, any amount, and we and here. And here we don't necessarily have a reason to say that kol shehu shouldn't mean even the smallest amount. So lo yotze ben chorin, we said the slave does not go free. So now does that mean because the eved himself is considered part of karka? That's what we're going to deal with over here. But in other words, so far it sounds like because the eved is part of karka, then therefore if he reserves for himself karka kol shehu without specifying a particular piece of land, then it means maybe he meant to keep the eved for himself. Well, if he means to keep the eved for himself, well then masha kona eved kona rabbi, so he's not going free and he's not acquiring anything. And the Mishnah continues. Reb Shimon Omer lo olam hu ben chorin. Reb Shimon says, no, either way, the slave would go free, even if he said, I'm reserving for himself some karka, ad sheyomer, unless the master says, kol nechosen is son of pliny avdi, all of my nechosim are given to pliny my eved, chutz me echad me riba shebehen, except for 1/10,000th of them. So, because then we say that maybe he means that the eved, maybe then it means that he considers that eved to be part of the metaltlin, Or he says, or he said, or as Rashi explains elsewhere, maybe he's like implicitly insulting the Eved over there and saying, you know, to you, to as far as I'm concerned, you're worth only 1/10,000th of the Nechassim. Whatever the case, the point is that in other words, in that case, then Reb Shimon says he's not necessarily freeing the Eved, and if he's not freeing the Eved, then there's nothing for the Eved to acquire because Mashkana Eved Kana Rabbi. There, Amud of Dimi by Yosef, Amud of Elazar, and as we learned before, as we learned at the top of the Amud, Rab Dimi by Yosef had said in the name of Rab Elazar, Osim Ataltlan Shir Eitzel Eved. When it comes to this din with an Eved and the document that's written out, the same way as the Mishnah had said that if he reserves any karka for himself, then the Eved doesn't go free. The same rule would apply if he reserved for himself any amount of Metaltlin, because after all, the Eved is. In the category of metaltlin as well. But when it comes to a ksuba, which was meant to be collected only from land, then if he reserved for his wife a certain amount of metaltlin, then it doesn't mean that she's forfeited her right to collect the ksuba from the land after her husband dies. Which we're gonna discuss that point. We're gonna discuss that point about ksuba in a little bit. And in fact, Rava asked Rav Nachman, why is there the difference? My time, what is the reason? Why distinguish between Avodim and Ksuba? And Rav Nachman explains, Avda Metaltalahu, because an Eved is Metaltalin, or Metaltalah, or Metaltalah have a shear. So what are you saying? He's saying, I'm giving away all my Nechosim, but I'm reserving for myself some Metaltalin. Well, the Eved is in the category of Metaltalin. And therefore, so when he says I'm reserving for himself, some metaltlin, when the master says that, it means maybe he means to reserve for himself some metaltlin, which means including the Eved himself. So in other words, basically, why is he writing out this document in the first place? Is to make the Eved feel good. The Eved has been. Maybe a little bit in a rebellious mood, you know, what am I working for you? And I'm going to end up working for the rest of my life and I'm not going to get anything out of it. So the master writes him out a document, you know what, here, fine, I'm going to set you free and I'm going to give you my nechosim. But he does it in a tricky way by saying, I'm reserving for myself some metaltlin. And then when the Eved goes to Beis Din with this document, they're going to tell him, sorry, you're part of metaltlin as well. And therefore he didn't mean to free you. He was just doing that for appearance's sake. So you can say metaltlin includes some of the word that he's leaving for himself. Some metaltlin includes other metaltlin, namely the Eved. Or ksubas ishim karkahu, whereas a woman's ksuba is meant to be collected from karka. Or metaltlo lo makarka lo habashir. So therefore, if he gives her some metaltlin as a special bequest in his will, then nevertheless it doesn't impinge on her ability to collect huksuba from karka later on. So that would seem to be the answer. Then we see from that discussion that avodim are considered like metaltlin. So, however, the Gemara says, Omar Le, but Rav Ashi says to so Ravina had brought that proof to Rav Ashi that you see from what Rav Nachman says, you see that Avodim are considered like Metaltlin. Omar Le, but Rav Ashi answers back, not necessarily. Anan mishum delav krus gita masninan law. No, because we have a different understanding of what the problem is. Why such a shtai matana to an eved is not valid? It has nothing to do with karka versus metaltlin. It's something else rather. When it comes to a get, when a man divorces his wife, we know it has to be get krisus. It has to be, it completely cuts off the relationship between them. Therefore, for example, there were dinim that come up in Masechta Gittin. If there's some kind of ongoing relationship still between them, some kind of ongoing financial relationship between them, or something like that, then the get is not valid if he reserved for himself something or whatever. So now we learn the fact that an eved goes free with a shtar. We learn that from a get. So therefore, if the master then is keeping for himself any rights in the shtar, it doesn't matter. Maybe the eved is considered like karka, but the very fact that he's keeping for himself some rights in the shtar and saying that I'm keeping for myself some metaltlin, that itself means that it's not korus, it's not a delav krus gita masninan law, it's not a complete cutting off with the shtar. So therefore, it's not a get krusus, and therefore it's possible. And therefore, it doesn't work, and therefore the Eved doesn't go free. So therefore, says Rav Ashi, to Ravina, you have no proof from there that it's a matter of an Eved being like Karka or like Metalton, respectively. No matter what you consider him like, the fact is that once the master is reserving for himself something, then you don't have Karus. That's the Rashbam brings that explanation from Rabbeinu Hananel and also from his Rebbeim in Leuser, which is it's an area of nowadays basically on the borderlands of France and Germany called Lorraine. It was in the early times of the Rishonim. It was a major place where there were many great Talmid Chachamim. We call them Chachmei Leuser. And so the Rashbam says that what we just said, the explanation we just said, comes among other things from them. But then the Rashbam brings another explanation is that we could say that he himself is not clear on whether he considers the Eved to be Metaltlin or Karka, since he didn't specify what Metaltlin he's keeping for himself. Then maybe we could say that he does mean the Eved to be considered part of Metaltlin. That doesn't show, though, that by a shchivmerah giving away his property, that we shouldn't say that the Eved is considered metaltlin. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. You really can't prove from that one way or the other. In addition, also, so that's that. So according to the Rashbam, then the Omer Leh that we have over here is Rav Ashi replying to Ravina. He's saying, Ravina, you're telling me that you're telling me that you want to bring a proof from that discussion of Rava and Rav Nachman, and I'll tell you that it's not a proof because the issue there is not because I would tell you that the issue is not is a is not is the issue the reason is not because of what Rav Nachman says about Metaltlin versus Karka, but rather because you don't have Kurus Gita. Tosfos explains that Tosfos explains that Rav Ashi is not giving a svara of his own. He's saying, you should know, Ravina, when we learn this discussion of Rav Nachman and Rava, we have a different version of that discussion, namely that Rav Nachman answers to Ravina, that Rav Nachman answers to Rava, that the reason why it doesn't work is because you don't have Kurus Gita, because the get shichru is not completely cutting off the relationship. So basically, in other words, according to the Rashbam, this is Rav Ashi is saying, I know that Rav Nachman said that, but I would disagree with Rav Nachman and I would give a different reason. Whereas according to Tosfos, Rav Ashi is saying, that's not the reason that Rav Nachman gave. Our version of the discussion is that Rav Nachman gave a different reason. Either way, the point is, you don't really have a proof one way or the other from that as far as whether an Eved is considered Metaltlin. Now, in the end, as far as the Halacha, the Rif discusses and says that earlier in our Masechta, we said, and then in the previous Perek, we did learn that that a Baal Chayv can't collect an Eved as payment for a loan. So therefore, so the Rif says on that basis, it means that we see Rav Nachman Omar Ein Goyvin. The Gemara had said over there, Rav Nachman had said you can't collect from Avodim in payment of a debt because it's when the Baal Chayv died, because then it's Metaltlin that belonged to Yesomim, and a Baal Chayv can't take from those. So therefore, so that would mean that's it. The halacha is that avodim are considered metaltlin, and that would be relevant as far as our din over here of the shchivmerah. On the other hand, the Shita Mekubetzes points out of the point it brings from an earlier rishon, which says in that case the Gemara should have mentioned that point over here. So you would say in the end that it would be left as a suffix and only a motzi mechavel of a raya. So in the end, in Shulchan Aruch, then the Shulchan Aruch paskens according to the Rif. And the reason is, despite what the Shita Mekubetzes says, the fact is that people do usually in Loshen Bnei Adam, Metaltlin do include Avadim. So the answer would be that if he says I'm giving my Metaltlin to Pliny, then yes, it does include his Avadim as well. As a side point, by the way, as far as that we said that with a ksuba, that a ksuba is meant to be collected from land. So there is actually eventually the time of in the time of the Gaonim, there's different reasons where that's explained why it is that a ksuba is meant to be collected only from Karka, various lomdasha explanations behind it. But in any case, there came a point during the time of the Gaonim when they made a takana that no. pretty much anything in halacha that involves the requirement to have karka also is going to apply to metaltalin. There came a point when historically, when many Jews didn't own land anymore because of various rules and regulations in different lands of the Golos that the Christians and Muslims had imposed. So it became uneconomical and sometimes outright illegal for Jews to own land. So the Goyim made a takana that many things in halacha that involve only karka do involve metaltlin as well. One of them is this matter of ksuba, that they made a takana that, in fact, after that, a woman can, in fact, collect her ksuba from metaltlin. They used a precedent that the Gemara mentions about even in the times of the Gemara, there were certain places so they used that, they extended that precedent and made it universal. Nonetheless, the Rambam points out, the fact is, people may not be familiar with the Takana of the Goyim, so eventually they started writing in Ksubas, and this is how we have the standard Nusach in our Ksubas nowadays, that where the husband explicitly takes on himself that I'm taking a shibud on all of my metaltlin when I'm living and after I'm gone and so forth. And that way, when she comes to collect her Ksuba, she can collect from metaltlin even if the husband's Yoshim would say, we're not familiar with this Takana of the Goyim. Nevertheless, we would show them, look, it says in the Ksuba explicitly that your father took on this shibud. Fine. Continuing on this topic of giving away all of the chosim, Omer Rava, Omer Chamisha ad sheyichtavu kol nechseihem. There are five cases when a person gives a matana or makes a certain declaration in a shtar, and it's not considered, and then there's a difference between whether he gives all of it or some of it. In other words, for example, with a shchivra, I was saying that the special dinim of a matnas shchivra, the din that im omar choser applies only if he one of the special dinim of that im omar choser applies only if he gave all, but not if he gave only part of it. So Rav Nachman, so Rava is pointing out in the name of Rav Nachman, we have a number of other cases like that where there's a difference between giving everything or giving some of it. The Elohim, and they are as follows: Shchivra, Avdoi, Ishtoi, Uvanov, Umavrachas. So four of the five of them we've already dealt with in our Masechta. The fifth one, Mavrachas, we're going to deal with over here in more detail. But let's first go through them in brief. Shchivra, Detnan, we said in our Mishnah, Shchivra, Shekosev, Kol Nechosev, Lachayim, that if a Shchivra wrote out a document giving all of his Nechosim to others, Vashir, Karka, Kol Shehu, and he reserved for himself any amount of Karka, which, okay, we had before of Yehuda telling us that it doesn't literally mean any amount, it means enough for him to continue living off of. Then matnose kayemes, then his gift is irrevocable. Loy shiur karka kol shehu, but if he didn't leave over any karka, ein matnose kayemes, then his matana is not, then his matana is revocable, is if he recovers. So there's one of the five cases where we see that there's a difference between giving everything and giving only some things. And there we had, okay, we had Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'aba saying that the same thing would be if he kept for himself metaltalin. The point is, in other words, that there's a difference between whether he gives everything or only some things. Next, Avdoi. Then we have the case of his slave, this Mishnah from Peah that we've been quoting a number of times in this sugya. Hakosev kol nechosev la'avdoi, where he writes out a document giving all of his nechosim to his eved. Yotze ben chorin, and then the eved goes free because he's part of the nechosim, and it means therefore that he's given him himself. But shir karka kol shehu, but if he left for himself any amount of karka, and we were discussing before whether that means also metaltlin, lo yotze ben chorin, then the eved does not go free because again maybe the master intended for the eved to be reserved still for himself, so therefore he hasn't gone free, and if he hasn't gone free, then he can't be koyne. So there's another example where you see there's a difference of giving all or giving only some. The third one, Ishtoi, is a case involving his wife, which we've learned previously in our Masechta, the Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, HaKosev Kol Nechosev LeIshtoi. When a man writes out a document to his wife that he's giving her all of his Nechosim, Lo yasa el apatrupa. So we said he's not actually giving her all of the nechasim. He's not meaning with that to disinherit his children. It just means that he's making her a trustee over it so that his Yoshim should have respect for her. But there would only be if he gave her all the nechasim, whereas if he reserved some of the if he reserved some of the nechasim for himself, or reserved it for others, then we would say that in fact it does that it means an actual gift to her and not just making her an apotropa. So again, there's another example where there's a difference between give. There's a major difference between giving all and giving some. Bonav. Then we have the case of his children, also that we've been discussing in that we learned in the previous perek, and we also discussed on Amud Aleph. Hakosev kol nechasev levonav. That he writes out a document giving all of his nechasim to his children, because of the ishtei karka kol shehu, and in that document he also writes that his wife is going to get a small amount of karka. Ibda ksubasa. Then we say she loses the right to collect her ksuba from any other karka that belonged to the husband. Normally she has a shibur on all the karka that the husband had left that's in the hands of the yoshim, but now when she was willing to accept this bequest of a small amount of karka, then we said it means that she's forfeiting her right to collect from the rest of the from the rest of the karka, because we said she's moichel the shibur of her ksuba for the sake of this matana. We discussed over there in detail, actually, that the Rashbam learns throughout that sugya, and also over here, that it doesn't mean she's forfeited uksuba entirely, it just means she's forfeited her right to collect from the karka that belongs to the Yisomim. Whereas the Rimi Gash had learned that it might mean that she forfeits the right to collect uksuba altogether. In any case, that's only when he wrote out. So there's a difference again whether he wrote all of his nechasim going to his children and gave karka kol shehu to the wife versus if he had written everything going to if he'd written a document giving everything to his children, then she's still soimach on that she can collect from that karka. And if he had reserved for himself some, then we would actually say, we learned also in that sugya, that it's one thing when he gives away all of his nechasim to others, but when he reserves some of it for himself, where then she still has the right to collect from that, because he has a shibud to her on that, then once she has a shibud on that, then she retains the shibud on the rest of the property, even though he gave it away as well. So again, there you have a difference. If he had given all of his nechasim to all of his karka to his children and one small amount to her, then she would forfeit the right to collect from anything else. But if he gave to his children and kept one small part for himself, then she would have the right to collect from everything. So there's another difference. There's another din where you see there's a difference between writing, we're giving away everything versus giving away some things. Now let's deal with the fifth one, which is something that's not really discussed, anywhere else. The Rashbam points out this fifth one called Mavrachas. It's mentioned briefly in a Gemara in Ksubas, but you really don't have, outside of our Gemara, a source for it. Mavrachas is as follows. Mavrachas literally means she's trying to make it run away. So the case is, an almana wants to get remarried. She has property of her own. Now, normally, that property is going to go into the marriage. It's going to become nichsi tzon barzel or nichsi malorg, as the case may be. So let's say she doesn't want to do that. She wants to keep those nechosim independent of her husband. So that way, to be exact, in other words, we said that her husband would end up yarshining her, as we learned in the previous perek. So she'd want to write out a document giving away those nechasim to somebody else, so that her husband doesn't get them. So that's called mavrachas. She's trying to get it run. She's trying to get it. She's trying to make it escape from her husband's control. So here we have also a din, whether it's all of it or some of it. De'omamar, namely, we learn in Ksubas on this subject, mavrachas, tzricha shetichtiv kol nechaseha. If she wants to do this kind of thing and keep the nechasim out of her husband's control, it would only work in such a way that she gets to get them afterwards, after her husband dies or she gets divorced, only if she writes out all of her nechasim. So she wrote out a document, she's giving all of her nechasim to somebody else, then it means that she's doing it only for mavrachas, and it means that then that it means the other guy doesn't truly own them. But if she had kept for, because again, it's one of those cases, anan sadi, we could be edim that she surely wouldn't have done that. She's only doing that for the purpose of being able to get married and to be able to keep it out of her husband's control, and not that she actually truly meant to give it away to this other person. But if she left over anything for herself, then again, we would say that the makabel is receiving all of it and she's never going to get it back. So the Rashbam points out that this is, again, this is something you don't really find this explicitly elsewhere in the Gemara, but that's based on this Gemara and based on that brief mention in a Gemara in Ksubas, then we have that implication. So that would be another case again where there's a difference between giving away everything versus giving only some. So the Rashbam actually points out, based on that Gemara in Ksubas, that which mentions also in that connection of Machlokas Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim on the subject, where Rashbam explains that there is a difference also between Bekulon and Mektsasan. If she writes Kulon, then the other guy is not Koina, and neither is her husband. It doesn't mean that in that case, if she wrote out only some of them, then the only way that it would work is if she writes a different lashon, mehayoyim l'chsheretz, it takes effect as of today, but only when I decide that it should be like that. So again, there's a difference between writing all of it and writing only some of it. Tosfos discusses that. Tosfos points out that there's also a case that we learned in the previous perek, where also there's a difference between kol nechasov and only some of it, but they are strictly speaking, Tosfos says, first of all, it doesn't mean kol nechasov, it just means that there has to be, that he wrote out, that he reserved an amount more than huksuba, and also, because beplugta like kamayri, you could say that there it's a machloikas, it's a machloikas, Rebbe Eliezer, and the chachamim, and we're not, Rebbe Nachman's rule over here is dealing only with cases when there's no machloikas. Now here you have the Machlokas Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, but nevertheless they do basically agree with the point where she's giving away all the Nechasim. Marshal and Marshal discuss that further and what exactly is the nature of the Machlokas of Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. But the point is, in other words, that the Reb Nachman includes that in his rule over here, that again, only if she writes this document, including all of her nechasim, would it have one status, and if she writes it with including only some of her nechasim, then it has a different status. Okay, and Reb Nachman continues, Ovechulu metaltli havishir. Now, in four of these five cases, whether he reserves for himself karka or metaltlin, either way, that's considered that he's left something out, and therefore it would be a matana b'mitzas. So, in the case of the shchiv mara, as we said, even if he keeps for himself only some metaltlin, means that the rest of the gift is irrevocable, where, even if he recovers. And the same thing with the eved and the rest of the cases. Levar miksuba, with the exception of the ksuba da'amakarki takinu rabbanon metaltli lo takinu lo tokun rabbanon, because the Chachamim made the takana of ksuba to be collected only from karka, not from metaltlin. So if he reserved for himself some metaltlin that and gave away all the karka, that still wouldn't prevent her from collecting from the rest of the karka. So only if he gave her some karka, and then we would say that ibdik subasa. Amema says that actually, even when it comes to a ksuba, metaltli diksibi b'ksuba v'isnu b'enayu, when you have metaltlin that were written into the ksuba as nichset so in barzel, if they still exist, have a shir, then if he says that I'm reserving those for her, then that's considered a shir. Then after all, she can collect from those without a shavua. So that would still be considered. Like the equivalent of leaving her some karka, and it means she's expecting to collect her ksuba only from those, and she's moichel her shibud on the rest of the karka. So again, after the time when the Goinim made the takana about collecting a ksuba from a taltlin, then the din would be different. But here we're talking about, according to the original din of the Gemara, that normally only karka is under a shibud to the ksuba. So the Gemara continues now. Now let's talk more about this about these dinim of matnas shchiv mara. So far we said as follows, that if he says that, so far we discussed on Amud Aleph, that if he says my metaltlin go to Pliny, or all of my metaltlin, or anything that could be moved, what about another thing that he might say? What if he says nechos omar nechosay leplanya? If he says my nechosim go to Pliny, So here, this could apply to a shimra. It would also apply to a body, to a healthy person, if a kinyan was made. As usual, with a matnas body, it requires a kinyan, a matnas shimra does not. So what exactly is included in the chosin? Let's go through the various kinds of things that he owns and see what would be included in the chosin. And at the end, the Gemara is going to ask about one particular thing, whether it's included or not. So, avde ikri nichsi. We can be sure that an eved is considered nechosin. So therefore, it would be included in the bequest, in the gift. As far as the last thing, by the way, when Amemar says at the end of here, he says metalpid not written in the ksuba. Rashbam points out actually that Amemar says something along those lines also in ksuba. So it means that the fact that she can collect them without a shvuah. So therefore, Amemar is mentioning that is mentioning this over here, and he's being consistent with what he says over there. Okay. So again, Omer Nechosei Leplani. If he's saying my Nechosin go to Plani, so let's work out what is and isn't included in Nechosin. Gerin Ashas brings actually that there's a girsa that based on Tosfos earlier in the Masechta, the girsa would be that he says Kol Nechosei. Because if he says Nechosai, then you could talk about which specific Nechosin, but when he says Kol Nechosei, then it means all of them. So we have to figure out what is included in Nechosai. So, Avde ikri nichsi, no question that avodim are considered part of nechosim, and we can prove that to Tanan because we have it from the Mishnah that we quoted several times. Akosif called nechosav avde yotze ben chorin. He writes out a document that he gives all of his nechosim to his eved, then the eved goes free. Why? Because the eved himself is included in nechosim. Next, ara ikri nichsi, also land is considered part of nechosim. The Tanan, as we know from Mishnah and Ksubas, nechosim sheyesh lahen achrayus, nechosim that have achrayus, namely land, that there's achrayus in the sense that a bal choiv can always collect them in payment of his debt, even from yisoyim. And his main smichus das is on that. Nechosim sheyesh lahen achrayus, niknin bekesef or shtar v'chazaka, those can be acquired with kesef, shtar, and chazaka. So we see that land is called nechosim in that Mishnah. Next, glima ikri nichsi, we see that clothing is considered part of nechosim, and we also have a Mishnah for that. Ditznan, because that same Mishnah continues, she'en lahen achrayus, other kinds of nechosim, metaltlin, that do not have achrayus, because, for example, bal choiv can't ordinarily collect from them, ein niknin elam mashicha, those can be acquired only with mashicha. But the point is, we still see the Mishnah calls them nechosim. They're just a different type of nechosim, nechosim she'en lahen achrayus. The Mishnah hadn't said the word nechosim again. It said nechosim sheyesh lahen achrayus, the kesef shtar v'chazaka, v'she'en lahen achrayus, but it means, and those that have no achrayus. So it's as if the Mishnah had repeated the word nechosim. Next, zuzi ikri nichti. We know that coins, we know that money is considered nechosim, and we can prove that because that same Mishnah says, because the Mishnah continues over there, she'en la'en achrayus, nechosim that have no achrayus, namely, for example, any kind of metalflin, niknim in nechosim she'esh la'en achrayus, bekesef of shtar of chazaka. They can be acquired with nechosim she'esh la'en achrayus via kesef shtar of chazaka. Meaning this is kinyan agav that we've learned about many times before. We last talked about it a couple of days ago, that you can be machna to somebody karka, and along with it, you machna to him metalflin, and the metalflin don't even have to be located in the karka. And we know that coins are included for that purpose. Kihod Rapapa, as we have the story with Rapapa, which we also learned earlier in our Masechta, Havol Etreser Alfi Zuzi Bechizoi. He had 12,000 zuz in Bechizoi that belonged to him. Now there's a machlokas we've shown him, and Tosfos discusses it earlier in the Masechta and in a few other places in Shas where the story is brought. Is it that he was owed that money, or is it that the money was a pikodin? There being a difference, because if it's a pikodin, then it belongs to him outright. If he's owed the money, then it's not necessarily be'ein. The question is going to be, because he was going to be makne to somebody with kinyan agav, would that actually work? Would that actually work with a halva where the money is not necessarily be'ein? The money doesn't necessarily exist right now. In any case, so the girsa that we have in front of us is havalei that he had, which would mean that it was a pikodin that he had previously deposited over there. But the other possibility Tosfos discusses earlier is that the girsa might be demasik that he was owed 12,000 zuz. Whatever the case, This was in Bechazoy, in an area. Bechazoy is nowadays part of Iran. It was a long distance away from Bavel, from where Rapapa lived. So he wanted to send Reb Shmuel Ba'acha as his shliach to go bring him the money. Now the problem is if Reb Shmuel Ba'acha doesn't have a kinyan on that money, then the people in Bechazoy should say, why should we entrust you with the money? You don't have any achrayus on it. If it gets lost or stolen or what have you on the way, then we're still going to be on the hook. So the papa had to be machna that money to Reb Shmuel Ba'acha. How's he going to do that if the money is not located over there? Aknino agav. So it was machna to him, agav, the threshold of his house. So he's machna to Rav Shmuel Ba'acha, the threshold, and with it, by kinyan agav, then he's acquiring the coins wherever they are. And that works. The word aseifa debase means the threshold of his house, although there are some Rishonim who say that it means the edge of his house. Whatever the case, the point is that it was some kind of karka. And he also, when Rav Shmuel Ba'acha came back with the money, Nafak La'ape Ad Tavach, Rav Papa went all the way to Tavach to meet him. So the Rashbam brings what's the relevance of that? Some say, so first of all, Tavach maybe is the name of a place. Then some say that Tavach means halfway down the road. So then the Rashbam says some Mefoshim want to explain the reason is because he wanted to make sure that Rav Shmuel Ba'acha is not going to end up being machzik in the money for himself. But no, the Rashbam says because he had written him our shah, he had written him a power of attorney entitling him to collect the money. So that means he made him a shliach, and he doesn't actually need to go and meet him on the way to collect the money from him. So rather he went out there to he went out there because out of simcha he was so happy that he had gotten his money that he went all the way to meet him on the way. Then there were Rishonim who learned the That it means he wanted to make sure that if Shmuel Ba'acha doesn't come home and actually make a chazaka on his threshold, and then he would have to buy it back from him. So therefore, he met him on the way before Reb Shmuel Ba'acha is able to make a chazaka on the threshold. Whatever the case, we see from that story that Reb Papa, we see from that story that 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 Reb Papa was able to be machne that money to Reb Shmuel Ba'acha through Kinyan Agav. And since the Mishnah in Kiddushin mentions that you can do that with that you can acquire through Kinyan Agav any nechassim, so we see that coins are included in nechassim. Next, shtore ikra nichzi. We can also demonstrate that shtores are included in nechassim. So again, the shchiv mara or a healthy person with a kinyan is saying that I'm giving all of my nechassim to Pliny. So it includes the shtores, where that people owe him money. De'omer, and we know that they're included in nechassim. De'omer Rabba Bar Yitzchok shnei shtores saying, because Rabba Bar Yitzchok tells us there's different ways in which a shtar can be written about the sale of a field. So you can have that the you can have the shtar was written out, but the makabel hasn't received it yet. Omar zchu b'sodah zeh l'ploni. If the owner of the field says to two people, you make a kinyan sodah and you're going to acquire this field on behalf of Ploni, v'kisvul lo yis hashtar, and write out for him a shtar as a raya. So they had done that. They made the kinyan. They wrote the shtar. They didn't give it to him yet. The original owner of the field is able to retract that they shouldn't give him the shtar, but he can't retract about the field itself. So they've already acquired the field on behalf of this other guy, and therefore he doesn't have the ability to take that back. But he would have the ability to tell them that I don't want you to write out the shtar after all. The shtar is only meant as a raya that he owns the field. He doesn't really need that in order to acquire the field. So he's able to take that back and to say that the and to say that they shouldn't write the shtar. That we had a long sugya earlier in our Masechta about the whole matter of osius niknis b'mesira, when a person says to write out a shtar that not necessarily is that valid yet. So that's one case. Then you have on the other hand, amanas shetichtavul is a shtar. But if he says make a kinyan and you'll acquire the field for him, almanas on the condition that you're going to write the shtar. So then choza ben b'shtar ben b'sada. Then he's able to change his mind both about the shtar and about the field, because then he's saying that the two things are tied together. And there's not going to be a kinyan unless the shtar is written. So once he's able to revoke the shtar, then the kinyan is revoked as well, because it was al tanai. Rav Chiya Oven, Amar Rav Huna, Rav Chiya Oven says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, I'm not actually disagreeing with Rav about Rabbi Yitzchok, but I would add that there's another case as well. Shloisha started saying, there's really three. Trade Hani Dam Moran, the two that we said, the two that Rav about Yitzchok had said, Idach, and then you have a third case. Im Kodam Moicher, because of a shtar, if the Moicher wrote out the shtar before they ever made the Kinyan, so he wants to have it ready for the lekeach whenever he sells in the field, and that would work. That works as we learn, as we're going to learn in the last parak of our mesecta. You are able to write a shtar for the seller even if the lekeach is not with him, because if there's going to be any loss, it's going to be on the moicher's side. If later on that shtar gets lost and it winds up in the hand of the lekeach, and he says, "Here, I have a shtar that you sold me this field." Tough luck on the moicher. Why'd you write out the shtar early? So such a thing would work. Then, so now, if such a shtar was written out before the sale actually took place, then Reb Chiya Bar Oven tells us, kiven shehechzik zebakarka, then the din would be that once the other guy, once the lekeach does a chazaka in the field, nikne shtar kol makom shehu, then he acquires automatically the shtar wherever the shtar is, and again he can't prevent him from getting the shtar. V'zuhi shishaninu. This is an example of what we just said in chosim she'in la nachrayus nikne min chosim she'esh la nachrayus bekesef or shtar of a chazaka. That chosim she'in la nachrayus metaltlin can be acquired together with nechosim sheyesh la nachrayus with karka with kesef shtar chazaka. So therefore, once the sale of the karka is final, then the shtar is automatically acquired with it. So we see, since we're using that mishnah about nechosim sheyesh la nachrayus being acquired with nechosim sheyesh la nachrayus, so we see that a shtar is included in the category of nechosim. So again, the shchivmanah or the bari says, "I'm giving my nechosim," then it includes. Then it includes shtoris as well. Earlier in the Masechta, when we learned this din about writing the shtar, about writing the shtar before the mechira, the Rashbam had dealt with in detail what the potential issues are and what it means as far as a shibud and so on and so forth. In any case, the point is that here we see that a shtar is included in the chosin. Next, we can also prove behema ikri nichsi. We can also prove that animals are considered nechosim, and therefore that when he says, "I'm giving my nechosim," that includes animals. As we learn in a Mishnah in Shkolim, hamaknish nechosav. A person donates his nechosim to hekdish. Now, suppose that among those nechosim was an animal that's suitable to be brought as a korban. Now, you have a general rule that when you makdish an animal that's capable of being brought as a korban, that it has to be somehow it, or its value is going to be brought as a korban. So schorim oilus. So you actually have a machloikas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah over here. Here the Gemara is just quoting Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, which is the halacha. Zechorim oilus, any male animals among them are to be brought as oilus, because they can be an oila can only be a male animal. Nekevis, any female animals which can't be brought as an oila, so that yimochru tzochei zivcha shlamim, you sell them to people who need to bring a shlamim, and then you use the money for other korbanos. But the reason why you do it that way, the reason why you don't, the reason why, according to Rabbi Yeshua, you don't bring the females as themselves as shlomim, is because since he said that he wants it to go to Hekdish, it means it has to be completely the property of Hekdish. And Ola is completely burnt on the Mizbeach, so it's completely the property of Hekdish. A shlomim, the owners eat most of the meat, so therefore it can't be considered that. Therefore, he says that it's going to need to be sold to somebody who will actually bring it as a shlomim, but the monetary value of it, which is really what he was makdish, is going to have to be used for an ola. The point is, again, the Mishnah says, hamakdish nechosav, and it includes animals. So we see that animals are included in nechosim. Likewise, oifus ikri nichzi. We can also demonstrate that birds are considered a nechosim for the same reason. Another Mishnah says over there, the next Mishnah says, hamakdish nechosim, v'hoi ben dvarim ru'uyin ha'ru'uyin legabim izbeach. So if he was makdish as nechosim and there were other things in them that are capable of being brought as korbanos, for example, yenus shmonim v'oifus, if it includes wine or oil, which can be brought for nesachim, or birds, which can also be brought as korbanos, so then the Mishnah describes what you do with them. So again, you see that birds are considered nechasim. Tefillin ikri nichzi, and we can also demonstrate that a person's tefillin are considered part of his nechasim as well. Dichtnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin, hamakdish nechasav malin loy tefillin. A person is makdish as nechasim, then we have to evaluate the value of his tefillin. So the word malin literally means to lift up. So does it mean, the Mephoshim discuss over there, does it mean that we take away his tefillin from him and he can't wear them because they belong to Hekdesh until he buys it back from Hekdesh? Or does it mean to begin with Malin, we figure out the value, we evaluate the value of them, and that's included in his bequest to Hekdesh? Whatever the case, we see that tefillin are considered part of Nechosim. So now that we went through all of that, Iboyelahu Sefer Torah Mai. So now comes the question, the last one in the chain over here, what about a Sefer Torah? Is a Sefer Torah included in Nechosim? The point is, Kivin Delay Mizdaban. Now, on the one hand, you can't freely sell a Sefer Torah. Unlike all Nechosim, where you have your rights to sell whatever you want, whenever you want, pretty much, a Sefer Torah, you can't. Because you have a halacha that you can't ordinarily sell a sefer Torah. It's because of the kedusha of it. So therefore, lav nichsihu, maybe it's not considered nechassim. Oiduma kiven demizdaben lumud Torah v'lisa isha. Or maybe since the halacha is there are cases where you could sell it, where you need money to go and learn Torah and support yourself while you're learning v'lisa isha, or to get married nichsihu, then maybe the sefer Torah to that extent is considered nechassim. So that would be the question. The Rashbam actually seems to not have, and the Marshal also takes out the words in the Gemara Kivin Delay Mizdaban. The question is rather, do we consider a Sefer Torah like Tefillin? We would say Tefillin is something that you wear. A Sefer Torah is only a mitzvah, or maybe we would say even if you could sell it, it's not considered nechassim. Or maybe since you do have certain cases, so it's not even a matter of that you're not normally allowed to sell it, but a matter of that normally it's meant for the mitzvah. However, there are certain cases where you sell it. Tosfos also points out that when it comes to acquiring a Sefer Torah, there's no question that it's considered like other metaltelin. You can acquire it with chazaka, with meshicha, or with kinyan agav karka, just like other metaltelin. But the question is over here, maybe it's still not considered nechassim because once you bought it, then you can only sell it for these kinds of purposes. So the Gemara says teiku, so that one, we're leaving as teiku, and therefore you don't have a clear answer of whether a Sefer Torah is considered part of Nechosim. So in short, in other words, when a Shchiv Merah says, or a Bori with a Kinyan, says that I'm giving my Nechosim to somebody else, does that include a Sefer Torah? We can't be sure about that, and therefore I'm Moitzim Chaver Levaraya.
The Shekiah.